You ready?
Ready?
Ready? Ready? Watch out, Frank!
Following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. I am your host, Steve Kent. I am joined, as always, by Lou, and we also have Diane on the line with us. For anybody who has yet to subscribe to the Missy AE podcast yet, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or Spotify. We have a lot to get to. Why don't we start out, let's see. Let's start out with, well, we got a lot actually.
Yeah.
For to even get to, we will be doing the games Gridiron Bowl Bonanza picks tonight. Both Lou and I will pick our each pick.
Yes.
Against the spread. We will be doing those live on the show tonight. Let's see. Why don't we start with MLB free agency, Lou? Because
yes.
I mean, there's a lot. You know, I promised everybody. I know I was light on Matt Patricia last week.
Weren't we all?
Yeah, I was kind of light on Matt Patricia. I don't think I'm going to be light on John Henry this week because.
Don't worry.
Well, you two know how I'm a Red Sox fan.
Yes.
And you know just exactly, you know, how passionate I am about certain players and whatnot. And
right, as am I.
One of the players I want to talk about first is Xander Bogaerts, who has He's officially signed an 11-year deal worth about $280 million with the San Diego Padres. Now, let's keep in mind, this guy's 30 years old. He's going to be 41 at the end of the contract, assuming he goes through the whole thing. And there are no opt-outs as part of this deal at all.
None?
There's no opt-outs. There's a full no-trade clause as well, if I recall correctly. So, just to sum up who Bogaerts is, who he was to the Red Sox, let's put it this way. He was basically the last living identity of the Boston Red Sox David Ortiz era. He was the last member of the Red Sox who has played alongside David Ortiz as part of the 2013 championship team. And I mean, there's just how do I put this correctly? Bogaerts leaving basically stripped the Red Sox of that identity. They have nobody knows. If you're a Boston fan, nobody knows what this team is now because they've basically lost the de facto captain of the team, the heart and soul of the team. Although technically, even though he wasn't officially named the captain, he technically was has been the captain since Jason Veritek retired. And what has pissed off fans the most is the fact that, you know, it would be fine if, okay, you know, they tried as hard as they could to get him to re-sign. But let's just take you guys through this entire process.
Yeah.
Originally, they approached him in spring training before this past season. They approached him in spring training, and they presented, I believe it was a 4-year, $90 million offer. Now, first off, that's actually insulting. That's only a slight upgrade compared to – he was making $20 million per year on his older deal, on his previous deal. And he had the opportunity to opt out this offseason, which he ended up doing. And basically the extension that they gave him or that they offered him was basically like maybe $1 million more per year than what he was currently making. Now, to me, Well, it's pretty insulting, Diane. If he's,
yes, it is.
You know, one of the if he's one of the top stars on the team, and you only offer him $1 million per year than what he's currently making, I mean, that's pretty insulting.
That is
okay.
Not to mention, he was coming off of an all-star season, too. He was an all-star in 2021, and he also obviously was an all-star this year as well. But he was he's a four-time all-star, a two-time World Series champion back in 2013 and 2018.
Mm-hmm.
He made the all-MLB first team in 2019, and not to mention he's a five-time Silver Slugger Award as a shortstop.
That's
he has a career batting. Huh?
That's a free, you know, put a list there of accomplishments.
Yeah. I mean, there's also a whole bunch of other ones, too. He's the longest starting shortstop in Boston Red Sox history.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this whole thing is the way that they handled it, because Bogart had said that he wasn't going to do any contract talks during the year. And not to mention is his agent, which literally that's all you need to know.
Yes.
Why? Then
Scott Boris is the agent of Aaron Judge as well.
Yes, he certainly is. He has a lot of agents from all over the sports world.
So he's a big time agent.
Well, I mean, he does Aaron Judge and a bunch of other players, too many to mention.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got some pretty good A-listers for his clients.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean he's the top agent in all of Major League Baseball. If there's a player that wants to make money, Boris is the guy that's gonna, you know, that you would go to basically make money essentially, and so. I mean, Bogaerts finished this season with quite a pretty good, baseball stat line. I mean, it wasn't that bad. 15 homers, a .307 batting average. Let's see, I believe it was, 73 RBIs. So, okay, you know, his production was a little bit down from last year, but his average was higher. This is a guy who's almost a career .300 hitter, and yet your best offer to him this offseason is 6 years, $160 million, which is about $120 million difference compared to what he got from San Diego. I mean, granted, you know, San Diego gave him five more years, but. Which, you know, like I told you earlier today, Lou, that is probably going to look absolutely horrific at the end of his contract, towards the end of his contract, I should say. But, you know, I think he was a fan favorite. And, you know, this would basically be like if David Ortiz was a contact hitter, and they traded away Dave, and they let David Ortiz walk in free agency. That's basically what Xander Bogaerts leaving does to the fans here.
Yes.
And what makes this even more insulting to the fans from Red Sox management is the fact that they claimed all offseason that Bogaerts was their, and I quote, top priority. But yet they went on and signed a couple of other names, and they ended up giving out multi-million dollars to an unproven player out of Japan named Masataka Yoshida.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bogarts gave them the opportunity to give one final offer, and they refused to. They said, we can't go, you know, we can't go to that amount. So now, San Diego's lineup, as if their lineup wasn't scary enough. You add Xander Bogarts to that. Yeah, you add Xander Bogarts to that list. Here's what the possible Padres lineup could be by mid-season.
Oh, boy.
At left field, you'll have Fernando Tatis Jr. In right field, you'll have Juan Soto.
Oh, boy.
At shortstop, you'll have Xander Bogarts.
Yes.
Third base, you have Manny Machado.
Mm-hmm.
First base, you have Jake Cronenworth. Second base, you have Ha-Seong Kim. Center field, you have Trent Grisham. Their DH is still to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
And your center, or I mean your catcher, you have Austin Nola. I mean, I don't know about you, but that, you know, that lineup looks pretty intimidating. Especially at the time.
It's a little scary.
I'm not really familiar with the Padres players.
Well, for many years, it hadn't been much to write home about, except maybe 98. But other than that, you know, yeah.
But it's
pretty scary to me.
Well, let's just say they have a nickname they go by in recent years. They call themselves Slam Diego.
Slam Diego.
And
yep,
I bet you can guess why they call themselves that.
Mm.
If you want to talk about the home of,
they're a good team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not just that, but if you want to talk about the home of Grand Slams, the Padres have been the leaders in Grand Slams the last couple of years.
Definitely a Grand
so
Slam right there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's why they call themselves Slam Diego.
Yeah.
Now
mm-hmm.
we take a look at the Red Sox lineup now without Xander Bogarts officially. You have Masataka Yoshida likely leading off at left field. You have Enrique Hernandez in center. You have Rafael Devers at third base. We'll get to Devers in a minute here because this may have an effect on Devers. At second base or shortstop, you have Trevor Story, depending on what the Red Sox decide to do. At right field, you have Alex Verdugo. DH, you have Tristan Casas, the rookie sensation, as they refer to him. First base, you have Eric Hosmer. Shortstop or second base, you have Christian Arroyo. And you have Reese McGuire and Connor Wong sharing the catching duties. Now, here's the thing with Trevor Story is his arm has shown weakness within the past year or so. So
why is he playing?
Well, that's why he played second base this year. Was because he agreed when he signed originally with Boston right before spring training last year, he agreed to play second base because his throwing arm had gone down a little bit when it comes to throwing power.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a concern as to whether or not he could legitimately play shortstop anymore because of that arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now you go from potentially having a shortstop second base tandem of Bogarts and Story to having a potential tandem of Story and Arroyo, which is a massive downgrade.
Yes.
I'll put it that way. It's considered to be a massive downgrade. So
Is it ever?
I mean, what were your thoughts when you first heard about Xander Bogaerts being officially switching coasts and going to San Diego?
I was like, say what? He's going where? Okay, it should be very interesting. As the downward spiral of the Red Sox continues, and I think there's going to even earn more. I mean, you know, there's nobody left from that 2018 World Series team now, and this is a, you know, hate to say to use that word rebuild, but that's exactly where they're headed. And with Bogaerts now departure, this is going to make it even, you know, more of a rebuild. You know, I don't see the Red Sox, you know, contending for quite a while now, unless you get somebody good in the draft, which it's kind of hard to come by. But this is a devastating blow to your Red Sox. I can't believe they said the word Red Sox.
Yeah, it definitely is a devastating. And actually, there are still some teams left of the 2018 World Series team. But 2013, though, everybody's gone from 2013.
Right,
now.
That's what I meant, 2013. That miraculous, I mean, and of course, that was a special year, a special Red Sox victory, of course, because, you know, with the bombing going off at the marathon, and, you know, and that was kind of interesting. So the Red Sox, you know, actually, you know, pulled off something that, you know, that I wish the Yankees went down for the World Series in 2001, but they were deserving of it. And the thing that happened,
yeah, and
you know, and they haven't won the World Series at home in, you know, since the end of the dinosaur era.
Yeah, and it also
that was a very long time ago, by the way.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, and it also, you know, it also was a time, too, when the FCC basically openly let David Ortiz cuss live on air. So
thank you very much,
because,
FCC. Idiot.
Yeah, because of the Boston bombings, they deemed that David Ortiz wouldn't be punished because of the severity of the situation.
That's understandable.
And that he was basically reacting emotionally to what had happened.
Of course, you know, everybody's gonna have that kind of feeling when something tragic like that happens. And you know, even though, you know, there's stuff you shouldn't say, but sometimes it can't help in situations like that. So that's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one, you know, the one thing that, you know, that really, I think, affected a lot of people, too, in particular was, you know, obviously we had the Red Sox and we had the Bruins, basically all in their respective finals at the exact same time. The Bruins obviously were in the Stanley Cup against the Chicago Blackhawks, and the Boston Red Sox, of course, were in the World Series. And it really helped, essentially, it really helped everybody heal, sort of, you could say, to where, you know, people needed to get their minds off of what was going on and everything, and the way to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Boston Red Sox were a huge way to help that happen.
Yeah.
But anyways, Diane, what are your thoughts on Xander Bogaerts leaving the Boston Red Sox? And more importantly, the Boston Red Sox lowballing him with their offer.
I think he was going to stay with the Red Sox.
I think we all thought that.
Yeah, it just, it didn't really seem, you know, it didn't really seem like, although there's a history, technically, with the Red Sox and homegrown free agents. For some reason, we don't re-sign our homegrown players, which leads us to Rafael Devers, whose contract is set to expire at the end of next season. Next off season, he will be officially a free agent. And we saw how much money Bogaerts got. I can tell you for one thing, Devers is expected to make a hell of a lot more. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're probably talking close to what Aaron Judge made this offseason. Which, speaking of which, let's talk about Aaron Judge real quick. Lou, what are your thoughts on Judge almost going to the San Francisco Giants?
No, I wasn't buying that. I wasn't buying that at all. That is the Yankees' top player, the face of the franchise, and, you know, with the season he had, Yankees were not going to, they're not going to put up with anything like that. You know, that was a franchise player, so they're going to do everything they could to keep, and they did, no matter what the offer was. I wasn't buying that for a minute. That was just all talk that they were going to the Giants or whatever. So I wasn't buying that at all.
Yeah, you know, it seems kind of odd. It seemed kind of odd that the Yankees would potentially let him walk because they wouldn't give him $40 million per season.
Right.
Which was basically what he got here. 9 years, $360 million. And Judge gave him, Hal Steinbrenner one last chance to match the offer. And Hal basically said, what will it take for you to stay a Yankee? And he said, give me one more year. And Hal said, done. Ultimately, so that basically means that the Yankees were offering 8 years at probably $320 million, something like that.
Yeah.
And instead, he ended up getting one more year. And, I mean, it's, you know, usually I understand teams when, you know, when you have a free agent that's 30 years old and – you know, you're weighing how long to sign him and how much money to actually really invest in him.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it, this is a guy who was literally just coming off of a historic season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, mm-hmm. he isn't much of a postseason hitter. What is his average, like 211 in the postseason?
Weak.
But you take a look at what he did this year. He broke the record, Roger Maris's record, for home runs in a single season in the American League.
Yeah.
He's basically been the de facto Yankee captain, essentially. And, by mm-hmm. the way, my understanding of it is turns out that this might be going along with the deal that he will be named the next Yankee captain. From what I've heard.
I think he deserved it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, because you know he's basically – what Xander Bogaerts has been to the Red Sox, Judge basically is that to the Yankees right now. You know, he's easily their best player without a shadow of a doubt. You know, you take away Aaron Judge from that Yankee lineup, and honestly, I can't even say you really have a lineup. I mean, yeah, you do have firepower, you know, in Giancarlo Stanton, Josh Donaldson, and a couple of others, but a lot of those guys are very strikeout prone. You know, there's not a lot
that
of guys. Exactly, that could be a huge problem. When you put Aaron Judge in that lineup, though, you know, it makes teams think about who they're actually going to pitch to. So
don't they just pitch to the first person in the lineup or the next person and the next person and so on and so forth?
Yeah, you know, it makes people think about.
Yes.
You know, just exactly, there's a reason why he's been an MVP candidate for so many years. So, you know, it's definitely well worth the money. Like normally, owners would balk at the idea of giving up investing $360 million into a 30 year old, but
mm-hmm.
when you look at what Aaron Judge has done, it's worth investing into him. And chances are, he's probably going to be their next captain. And from the sounds of it, it sounds like, you know, the Yankees may not be done. My understanding is that they are planning on trying to upgrade their starting rotation by attempting to sign Carlos Rodon, who apparently wants a 7-year deal. They're also attempting to sign Carlos Correa as well, as sort of a package deal. They bring in both Correa and they bring in Rodon at the same time. And if they can lock up both of those guys, from what it sounds like they are going to offer their prized prospect shortstop Anthony Volpe into a deal for the outfielder from the Pittsburgh Pirates, Brian Reynolds, to bring him to New York. So from what it sounds like, it sounds like there's not going to be, this isn't the end of potential moves to be done by Hal Steinbrenner here. So it's kind of an exciting time actually, for any Yankee fans, because it really looks like Steinbrenner is finally starting to live up to his dad.
Can he live up to his dad?
You know, it's a really shame when kids start to become like their parents.
When you think about it, Steinbrenner wouldn't have allowed Aaron Judge to hit free agency.
Not at all.
Judge would have been locked up before free agency even began. So
yes.
I kind of feel like with them re-signing Cashman to, I think they gave Cashman a 4-year extension.
Yes, they did.
It really seems like the Yankees feel like they have a lot to prove this offseason. The fact that they had one of the hottest teams in the league last year, and they basically faltered down the stretch.
Yeah,
and
sure did.
And exited, they got humiliated basically in the playoffs. So, a lot of people felt like they shouldn't have even won the American League Divisional Series. So,
right.
But going back to Boston for a second here, when it comes to Rafael Devers, Devers is a free agent. After this upcoming season, he'll be a free agent. He was very good friends with Xander Bogaerts, and he actually said in his goodbye message to Bogaerts and his tribute to Bogaerts on Instagram that Bogaerts is an example to live by. Kind of makes you wonder, and Devers was another player who the Red Sox lowballed. And
yes.
just to give a brief summary of players that have been lowballed by Celtics management since John Henry came in. You have John Lester, who ended up leaving in free agency to go to the Chicago Cubs. You have Mookie Betts, who got lowballed by Red Sox management, and they ended up trading him for peanuts, basically, to the LA Dodgers.
Really?
Now you have Xander Bogaerts. Well, yeah, because, Mookie Betts ended up being traded to L.A. They ended up getting They ended up getting Connor Wong, Jeter Downs, and a couple of other, one other piece, I believe, if I recall correctly. But so far, Wong and Downs are the only two parts to have made it up to the majors since that trade, and neither one has been able to stick. So basically, you can call that Mookie Betts trade a blowaway win for the Dodgers in that scenario. Now you have Xander Bogart. Now you have Xander Bogaerts being lowballed by Boston. He ends up leaving to go to San Diego. And at the same time, they also lowballed Devers during spring training as well. So that begs the question.
Devers is going to go end up being in San Diego because that's where his friend is?
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily. They claim, according to somebody in Devers' camp, they claim that Bogart's leaving for San Diego does not necessarily mean that Rafael Devers won't re-sign with Boston.
Right.
But the thing is that Boston needs to show that they actually value him. And
yes, they should.
When you when you take a look at how they lowballed Xander Bogaerts, and by the way, this isn't I placed oftentimes you've heard me place blame on Heim Bloom for the lack of moves that the Red Sox have made and everything. It's not on Heim Bloom.
Yeah.
This is all on John Henry. This is just because the guy would rather want to own an NFL franchise. Yeah, that's right. He wants to try and get involved in the Washington Commanders incoming sale that's going to happen. And he also one day wants to own
the Commanders
NBA
aren't going to be a team.
No, they'll be a team. Not a very good one, but they'll be a team.
The Commanders are up for sale. I'm trying to figure out what this means.
Well, yeah, they are. From what it sounds like things are heading towards a sale. Because we'll talk about that in a minute, actually, because there is new news coming out about Dan Snyder that involves the government, and we'll discuss that in a little bit. First off, John Henry owns the Red Sox. He owns Liverpool out in the Premier League, and he owns the Pittsburgh Penguins that he just recently bought within the last year or so.
And now he wants to own the Washington Commanders.
Now he wants – now from what it sounds like he wants to try to get the Washington Commanders, and he also wants to own an NBA team as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
It's unknown currently, but apparently he does want to get involved into the NBA. And from what it sounds like, with the stuff that's happening in Phoenix, maybe perhaps Phoenix could potentially be up for a sale.
Really?
With the issues that was going on in management with sexual harassment and stuff like that, who knows? Phoenix might be up for a sale in the near future. But my whole point is. Oh, and another thing, actually, Henry also. This is coming off of a team that finished in dead last in the AL East, and instead he wants to raise ticket prices. Blaming the rising inflation that he wants to raise ticket prices for a last place team.
Really?
And then to top it all off,
That's not going to work.
You know, Red Sox fans would be fine with this if he acted like he was the Yankees owner. If he acted like he was Steinbrenner and would actually care about who he signs to his team.
Well,
but he does.
Steinbrenner is enough.
But he doesn't care. All he cares
no.
about is making money, basically, at this point.
You should really care about who you're assigning to your team.
Yeah. Yeah, one Steinbrenner in baseball is enough. One Steinbrenner in sports is enough, period. Yeah.
Well, there are two. George and House.
His son. I mean, George has passed away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
and
Hank also passed away, right?
I think he did.
So Hal is basically the sole remaining Steinbrenner that was involved with the Yankees.
Right.
Basically.
Okay.
But the main point I'm trying to make here is there was no way that the Red Sox were going to sign Bogarts at this point.
Yeah.
Because Henry does not believe in paying homegrown stars. Because of the fact that they're homegrown, he wants to always try and get a discount.
Oh, that.
So, like a loyalty discount, basically.
Right.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou, on the way Red Sox management handled this entire process?
Sure. How they handled it, don't you mean how they didn't handle it? I mean, this whole thing's a mess. I mean, what'd you expect? They didn't handle it very well at all. Talk about poor management. That's as bad as you can get. You know, this was a match made in hell.
And here's the thing. Obviously, another thing, too, that he owns, John Henry owns, I think it's the Boston Globe or the Boston Herald, one of the two Boston newspapers. He also has an ownership stake in NESN as well, the New England Sports Network.
Our version of YES.
And originally, what's it called? Not originally, but right away, as soon as the Bogarts news came out, they immediately started burying Chaim Bloom, throwing him completely under the bus. Chaim Bloom is John Henry's fall guy.
Everybody has one.
Chaim Bloom is the one that's basically going to essentially lay down on the grenade. You could put it that way.
Something I wouldn't do, but I get the picture there.
So, I mean, it's
going to hurt, though.
It's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing, honestly, with how they handled things.
Yeah. Hey, you go sit on a grenade.
Yeah. Another big signing that took place this week, the Philadelphia Phillies, they agreed the terms with free agent shortstop Trea Turner on a 11-year, $300 million contract, officially landing the next shortstop for the next decade for the Phillies. And also it helps as well that Trea Turner is very, very close with Bryce Harper. Harper played a huge role in bringing him onto the team here. So now Turner joins sluggers Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, and JT Realmuto as the Phillies try to get back to the World Series next year. This past year, Turner hit .298 with 101 runs scored, 21 homers, and 100 RBIs to go along with 27 stolen bases and 708 plate appearances last year with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And considering that Citizens Bank Park is a hitter-friendly ballpark, oh my God, are those numbers going to skyrocket?
Yeah.
I mean, those are pretty good numbers to begin with, but now all of a sudden, you know, you then have him play half of his games in a hitter-friendly ballpark. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Those numbers should expect Philly fans should expect those numbers to skyrocket.
I wouldn't be surprised.
The Dodgers, though.
Neither
the
would
Dodgers, I. Though, did, yeah, the Dodgers, though, while they did lose him, they did keep one of their own as they brought back Clayton Kershaw on a one-year, $20 million deal, which was originally agreed on back on November 11th, but the deal is now official. And so it's split up with a base salary of $15 million along with a $5 million signing bonus. So Kershaw will be back for a 16th season in L.A. after he finished last year with a strong 2.28 ERA to go along with 137 strikeouts to 23 walks. Across 126 and a third innings through 22 starts. Now, the big question is, how durable is Kershaw going to be now that he's getting older? Because he's been dealing with back issues over the last couple of years. You know, he's missed quite a bit of time. But he still, when healthy, is still one of the best pitchers.
Maybe you should just retire already.
Well, I don't know if I would say retire just yet. I mean, he's 34 years old, so he probably still has a couple of years left in him.
Yeah, he's getting injured all the time.
That's true, too. Nobody wants an injury-hit player.
Yeah. I mean, he is definitely, you know, he has been dealing with injuries throughout the last couple of years, but, you know, he is still one of the premier pitchers in the National League. So the Dodgers keeping him is actually pretty huge for them, considering the fact that they lost not just Trey Turner, but also they lost Cody Bellinger. Who ended up agreeing to terms? He ended up agreeing to terms with the Chicago Cubs on a one-year, $17.5 million deal. And I kind of found this kind of odd that Bellinger only agreed to a one-year deal. But from what it sounds like he wants to go back into free agency next year, assuming that he's going to get back to the player that he has been the last couple of years for the Dodgers, because he was on he had a little bit of a down year this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess he expects, you know, he's going to get back to as close to that player as he was. The New York Mets, they were pretty busy. First off, the big fish
Verlander.
That they signed, Justin Verlander, the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner, to a two-year, $86.66 million deal, which will also contain a $35 million vesting option for the 2025 season. To go along with it. So technically you could say it's almost a 3-year deal. If they decide if the vesting option gets exercised. I mean, hell, last year he was by far the best pitcher in the American League. A 1.75 ERA, a strikeout to walk ratio of 185 strikeouts to 29 walks, 175 innings, 28 starts, and this is a guy who was returning from Tommy John surgery. 39 years old, coming back from Tommy John surgery, and you're posting those numbers.
Nothing short of phenomenal.
It's almost like this guy is baseball's version of Tom Brady, except without the multiple Super Bowl trophies.
Yeah.
The fact that he can still produce. Oh well, yeah. I mean, he does have multiple rings now because he won two of them with Houston. But the fact that he can still produce at this level, I mean, that's actually pretty amazing when you think about it, considering he's 39 years old.
Yeah, for a pitcher, that's got to be, you know, well, thinking of the pitcher, he still could probably have, you know, a few more years with him. You know, he's not an everyday player. So you still got a little bit of time yet. But at 39, you know, in baseball, that's getting up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it definitely is. But the Mets were not done there, though, as they made two more signings. They also signed left-handed pitcher starter Jose Quintana to a two-year, $26 million deal. He agreed to the deal earlier this week. He actually returned to relevance this past season, posting a terrific 2.93 ERA. With 137 walks, or I mean not walks, 137 strikeouts to 47 walks ratio across 165 and two-thirds innings between both the Pirates and the St. Louis Cardinals. And he actually drew a start in the first game of the National League Wild Card Series against the Phillies as well for the Cardinals this year, where he fired 5 1/3 scoreless innings. So that's actually... You know, that's a pretty good addition for the Mets rotation. But, and I brought this up to you earlier today, Lou, the Mets, they may have to focus on preparing for the future soon.
Yes.
Because, I mean, they lost Jacob DeGrom, and their pitching isn't getting any younger.
No, it isn't.
So, you know, this is definitely going to be, obviously, you know, they're in win now mode, but you may be headed for a starting rotation rebuild, not too far in the future here. Not just that, but they also signed right-handed pitcher David Robertson to a one-year, $10 million deal, and he will function as a setup role for the Mets behind closer Edwin Diaz, and he was outstanding this year, registering a 2.40 ERA between both the Cubs and the Phillies while recording 20 saves in 63 and two-thirds innings. And if Edwin Diaz obviously can't be used, then the Mets will go to David Robertson in potential save situations. So, I mean, you know, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch for the Mets out there in the bullpen. Let's see here. The Washington Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
So, where do we start? How should I start this? Okay, so there was a report that was published on Thursday by the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. And they are alleging that the Washington Commanders created a toxic work culture for more than two decades. Former female employees have said that top levels of the organization were ignoring and downplaying sexual misconduct and hundreds of instances of sexual harassment by men at the top levels of the Commanders. Dan Snyder, the owner, was also accused in the report of inappropriately touching a former employee at a dinner and having staffers produce a video of sexually suggestive footage of cheerleaders. It was also alleged in the report that women auditioning to be cheerleaders had to walk on the field while Snyder and his friends gawked from his suite through binoculars.
Uh-huh.
And
why?
This is...
He's a dirty old man, that's why.
Yeah.
Who is?
Dan Snyder, owner of the Commanders.
Oh.
The guy who claims, who basically tried to blackmail the other owners by claiming that he has a lot of dirt on them.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, you know, this is conclusion actually of an investigation that originally began in October of 2021 after the NFL didn't release a report of its review of the workplace culture of the Commanders. So the government decided to take it in their own hands. The original review by attorney Beth Wilkinson had been completed in the summer of 2021 for the NFL. And that only resulted in a $10 million fine to the team and a statement by Goodell saying that that Snyder had, quote unquote, learned his lesson.
Or did he?
One of the representatives of the House of Representatives, Karen B. Maloney, who is the chair of the House committee, said that the congressional report shows how one of the most powerful organizations in America, the NFL, mishandled pervasive sexual harassment and misconduct. She also added, "Our report tells the story of a team rife with sexual harassment and misconduct, a billionaire owner intent on deflecting blame, and an influential organization that chose to cover this up rather than seek accountability and stand up for employees." Also been alleged that Snyder looked to interfere with the investigation and was accused of intimidating witnesses and refusing to release former employees from their confidentiality obligations. As some 40,000 documents were collected during the review carried out by Wilkinson, and Snyder was accused of using a secret agreement with the NFL to block access to them. Also, the House committee had claimed that Snyder was evasive and misleading and alleged that the team owner also launched his own shadow investigation, which was used to cast him as the victim of a defamation campaign and deflect responsibility for the team's toxic work culture. The NFL was also criticized by the report, stating that they had misled the public about its handling of the Wilkinson investigation, and they have not sought true accountability for those responsible. Now, the NFL currently does not require teams to report confidentiality and non-disclosure agreements, and the league has not ensured that its own workplaces are free from discrimination and harassment.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to wonder just exactly what's going to come of this, because, you know, Snyder is basically dug into the ground and claiming that, you know, he has a lot of dirt on certain owners that he could could unleash if he wanted to. Jim Irsay, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, has been trying to push for Snyder to be voted out by a majority of the other owners around the league. As a team owner has never been forced out in the league's 102-year history. You know, it's honestly, I find it hard to believe with this report coming out that Snyder would be able to remain owner for much longer.
I don't think he will.
I'm not the owner.
He won't be for long, guys. Now, after this, I'll hit the fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lou and Diane, the fact that the government even got involved in this and did an even bigger report an even bigger investigation, shouldn't that basically force the owners to, okay, we definitely
yes.
have to force him out of the league?
As well you should.
How do you force someone out of the league?
You should get him out.
Yeah, they
would
need
the worst that be.
They would need a they would need a quarters vote. So they would need 24 of it's 32 teams, right?
Yes.
So
okay.
They would need 24 owners to vote for him to be
overwhelming majority.
Yeah. They would need an overruling majority, basically.
That's not easy to do. Not so fast.
It was easy, but they'll get it.
There's a lot of evidence, Lou. There's a lot of evidence
yes.
that has, and, you know, from my understanding, too, obviously the article didn't mention this, but I remember reading something along the lines of, some of the cheerleaders had to reportedly strip down as well.
Yeah, I heard that. That is something you don't do.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell kind of audition is that? I mean, that's more of like a porn audition. Yeah, that's more of like a porn or Playboy audition.
Yeah, it is.
You know, rather than actually being an audition for.
And yet they're falling for it too. That's the shameful part.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you think about it, most of them, most cheerleaders, it's their dream to basically be an NFL cheerleader.
Yeah, but the resort to such, you know, tactics like that, you know, stripped down, you're trying to be a cheerleader, not a stripper.
Yeah, but you never know what people may do in order to get what they want, so.
True. Heard that before, too.
You know what? Let us go into, before I forget, let us go into our bowl bonanza picks.
All right.
So
I got one thing before we do that. We have a Heisman Trophy winner.
Oh, we do. Okay. So.
Take a guess. Who it is. Take a stab.
I'm going to say it's Caleb Williams.
You got it. No surprise.
That's exactly what I told you earlier today, Lou. I said, bet if you're a betting man, put the house on Caleb Williams.
And they did.
And the thing that gets me is I guess Max Duggan was the runner up.
Yes.
What the hell kind of Oh, my God. What the hell kind of field was that? When you have Stetson,
yeah.
Now granted Stetson Bennett, though, is a six-year player, a six-year senior.
Very rare.
You have Stetson Bennett, you have C.J. Stroud, and you have Max Duggan, and literally that's the best that you could come up with to go up against Caleb Williams.
Right. If I was on the committee, I don't think I'd stoop that low.
I mean, that may be one of the weakest classes in recent memory for the Heisman.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's no wonder why Caleb Williams won it with such ease.
Yes.
But anyways, our bowl bonanza picks.
Okay.
So basically, what we do, we did this last year, if I recall correctly, where we will be picking against the spread. So basically, it'll be, you know, either the team that we pick has to basically win by that many, or if you're picking the underdog. They have to lose. They have to be sure to lose by no more than that much in order to gain a point. And Lou, as part of the game's gridiron for the Bowl Bonanza this year, we will also be doing the game's lock. So what that means is you can choose one game that you're completely confident that they're going to cover the spread. And
okay.
If they win, they cover the spread, you get an extra point to go along with. So instead of 1 point, you get 2 points, essentially.
All right.
Which may not seem like a big deal, but it's actually proven in the past to be a pretty big deal when it comes to the standings. So let's start off with this first bowl. We have 32 bowls to choose from.
Wow.
Let's start off with this first one. We have the Wasabi Fenway Bowl at Fenway Park, pitting the Cincinnati Bearcats against the Louisville Cardinals. And the point spread is 1.5 in favor of Louisville.
You know, I'm gonna go the other way. I'm gonna say the Bearcats.
You know what? We must be telepathically thinking here, because I had made my selection first, and I had because I'm pasting them here on my on WordPad, and I picked the Bearcats on mine. So we must be really thinking alike here. All right. Our second game, this one is favored by 11. We have the Florida Gators, who are 11-point underdogs to the Oregon State Beavers at the SRS Distribution Las Vegas Bowl at Allegiant Stadium in Vegas. So who do we have for this one?
I'm going with the Bruins. I was just waiting on the spread. I'm going with the Bruins.
Well, no, we're talking Gators or Beavers.
Yep. Oh, I'm going to go Florida Gators.
Florida Gators. Okay, I went with Florida Gators as well. So you said Bruins. I mean, we can go straight to that one actually right now. Let me just find it here.
Okay.
We have the UCLA Bruins taking on – hang on. UCLA. The UCLA Bruins are 6-point favorites over the Pittsburgh Panthers.
Oh, 6.5, that's too kind. They're gonna kill them.
So you got the Bruins in that one?
Oh, yeah, hands down.
Yeah, I'll take the Bruins on that one as well. And that was for the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl on that one.
That'll be great.
Now, this next one is the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl, which is presented by Stifel. That will be at SoFi Stadium. We have the Fresno State Bulldogs as 1-point favorites over the Washington State Cougars.
I'm going Fresno State.
You know what? I kind of thought you would, because so far it's interesting. So far we are 4-for-4 with our predictions here.
Just a coincidence.
Maybe just a coincidence, but we'll see. Our next one, 6.5 is the spread. We have the Lending Tree Bowl, which is at Hancock Whitney Stadium in Mobile, Alabama. We have the Rice Owls against the Southern Miss Golden Eagles. And Southern Miss is the one favored by 6.5.
I'm going to go at Rice.
Man, oh, man, another one. I am going with Rice as well on this one. All right, the New Mexico Bowl at University Stadium in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We have the SMU Mustangs, who are 1.5-point favorites against the BYU Cougars.
I'm going to go BYU.
Ah, so we do have one where we disagree. I am going to go with the SMU Mustangs on this one.
It had to happen.
All right, our next one, we have the Frisco Bowl, which takes place at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. This will pit the North Texas Mean Green underdogs to the Boise State Broncos.
Fresno State.
You'll go Boise State?
Repeat that again. It was Boise State and who else?
Boise State and North Texas Mean Green.
North Texas,
okay. All right. That one, I will take Boise State in that one.
Okay.
Our next matchup is at the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl, Amon G. Carter Stadium in Fort Worth, Texas, as the Baylor Bears are 6.5-point favorites over the Air Force Falcons.
Baylor.
You got Baylor?
I got Baylor.
Okay. And I agree with you on that one. I am going with Baylor as well. Now, on Friday, December 23rd, we have the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl at Raymond James Stadium, where we will have the Wake Forest Demon Deacons, who are 1-point favorites over the Missouri Tigers.
I think of Wake Forest more as a basketball school, so I'm going to have to go in the other direction.
Okay, so we will go with the Missouri Tigers for you, and
Missouri.
For me, I will take Wake Forest on that one.
Ooh.
Okay, the Camellia Bowl at Crampton Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama. We have the Georgia Southern Eagles, who are 3.5-point favorites over the Buffalo Bulls.
I'm taking the first one.
Okay, Georgia Southern Eagles. And I will take the Buffalo Bulls on this one.
All right.
I don't know. For some reason, I've looked at a couple of Bulls games whenever they've appeared on the selections, and for some reason, I've resisted taking them for some reason, and it always makes me wish I had taken them each time. So,
yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Our next one is the ServPro First Responder Bowl at Gerald J. Ford Stadium in Dallas, Texas. The Memphis Tigers are 7.5-point favorites over the Utah State Aggies.
I'm going to go Memphis.
All right. And I am going to go with Memphis as well in that one. Next up, we have the Ticket Smarter Birmingham Bowl, which is at Protective Stadium in Birmingham, Alabama. The Coastal Carolina Chanticleers are 10.5-point underdogs against the East Carolina Pirates.
I'm going to go East Carolina.
East Carolina, okay. And I will go with the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers on this one.
Remember, I do my show in two parts with this.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
And actually, I'm gonna try to be on for the second half next time, so that I can give my picks on your show as well.
Okay.
So, our next one, we have the Guaranteed Rate Bowl at Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona. The Wisconsin Badgers are 3-point favorites over the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
I'm going to go Wisconsin. But what's the going rate on that anyway? Is it what, 4%, 5%? I can't figure that out. Okay.
Wait, what are you going to go with the Cowboys?
Wisconsin.
All right.
I'm just trying to figure out going right.
I will go with Wisconsin, too, because I honestly have not been impressed at all with Oklahoma State. You know, this does not the same team. This does not look like the same team that was ranked high last year. So
No.
Next, we have the Military Bowl presented by Peraton at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland. The Central Florida Knights are 1-point underdogs to the Duke Blue Devils.
I think we're going to go with Central Florida on this one.
Central Florida. Okay, and I will go with the Duke Blue Devils. I know it's kind of strange, but Duke unusually had a pretty good season this year. So
yeah.
I'm kind of taking a shot in the dark on that one. Our next matchup is the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. We have the Kansas Jayhawks, who are 3-point underdogs to the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Arkansas.
Damn straight. Woo Pig Suey. I am selecting Arkansas as well in this one. Next, we have the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at Petco Park, where the Oregon Ducks are 13-point favorites to the North Carolina Tar Heels.
Well, I can say that is Duck.
All righty, Oregon Ducks it is, and I am selecting Oregon as well in this one. Next is the Tax Act Texas Bowl at NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas, where the Texas Tech Red Raiders are 3.5-point underdogs to the Ole Miss Rebels.
Ooh, tough one. I think I'm going to go to Ole Miss.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ole Miss as well.
That was not easy.
You can't go wrong with the SEC, so I'm taking Ole Miss
on
that
one.
You could,
but this time you probably won't.
Next, we have the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium. The Syracuse Orange are 7.5-point underdogs to the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Arizona.
Minnesota?
You said Minnesota or Arizona?
Yeah, I said Minnesota.
Against
the Syracuse Orange.
Oh, I gotta go with the Orange.
The Orange, okay. You know what? I think I will go with the Orange as well because I believe the Orange – didn't the Orange have a pretty good season this year?
Yes, they did.
Which is weird considering they're usually a basketball school.
They can go both, I think. They're not that too bad at football now. It can go both ways.
All right, our next matchup, we have the Oklahoma Sooners, our 7.5-point underdogs to the Florida State Seminoles in the Cheez-It Bowl.
I'm going to pick Florida State.
Florida State, okay. And, you know what, I'm kind of going back and forth on this one, but I think I'll go with Florida State as well. Oklahoma was just way too up and down for me this year.
Yeah.
How about the Valero Alamo Bowl at the Alamo Dome with the Texas Longhorns being 6-point favorites over the Washington Huskies?
Texas.
All righty, and I will agree with you on that one. I will go with Texas as well here in this. Then at the Duke's Mayo Bowl, we have the Maryland Terrapins as 1.5-point favorites over the NC State Wolfpack.
Maryland
under NC State, Maryland. I'll go with the Terrapins.
You know, I kind of thought you would go that way, and I'm going there too, because Tua's brother is finally going to show what he can do in a bowl game. So
yeah. Although that was not an easy decision.
Yeah. All right, next we have the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish are 3-point favorites over the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Though I am a Notre Dame fan, they haven't really been too impressive this year until later. So I think I'm going to go with the Gamecocks.
All righty. You take the Gamecocks, and I will go with the Irish on this one.
Okay.
All righty. Up next is the Barstool Sports Arizona Bowl, and we have the Ohio Bobcats, who are 1-point favorites over the Wyoming Cowboys.
I'm going to take Wyoming on that one.
All right. And I will agree with you on that, too. I will go with Wyoming as well. This one should be pretty interesting. The Capital One Orange Bowl at Hard Rock Stadium. The Tennessee Volunteers are 7-point underdogs to the Clemson Tigers.
No, I'm going to go Clemson.
All righty, Clemson it is, and I am going to agree with you there. I'm going to take Clemson. I think if Hooker was playing, I probably would have gone with Tennessee, but Hooker is not going to be playing in this one, obviously because of his injury. Next, we have the All-State Sugar Bowl at Caesars Superdome, with the Alabama Crimson Tide being 3.5-point favorites over the Kansas State Wildcats.
I think I'm going to go with Kansas State.
Okay, we got Kansas State for you, and I am going to go with the Alabama Crimson Tide here. Up next, the Iowa Hawkeyes are 2-point favorites over the Kentucky Wildcats in the Transperfect Music City Bowl.
Iowa.
Iowa, and I will do the same. I am going with the Hawkeyes as well. For now, we go to the semifinals for the college football playoff. First one will be at the Vibo Fiesta Bowl at State Farm Stadium. The TCU Horned Frogs are 7.5-point underdogs to the Michigan Wolverines.
Wolverines all the way.
Damn straight. Go blue. I have Michigan as well in this one. And the other semifinal, which is at the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, sees the Ohio State Buckeyes as 6.5-point underdogs to the Georgia Bulldogs.
Georgia will win, but Ohio State will cover.
Georgia will win, but Ohio State will cover. Okay, so
yes.
I will give you Ohio State on that one for the cover. All right, so the ReliaQuest Bowl at Raymond James Stadium. Oh, by the way, I'm going with the Bulldogs on that one for Ohio State and
right.
Georgia. The ReliaQuest Bowl at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. The Mississippi State Bulldogs are 1.5-point underdogs to the Illinois Fighting Illini.
I think Illinois on that one.
Illinois?
Yes.
All right, I am going to agree. I will go with Illinois as well. Brett Bielema has really whipped that team into shape there. Next, we have the Goodyear Cotton Bowl that sees the USC Trojans as 1.5-point favorites over the Tulane Green Wave.
USC.
Yeah, Honestly, you know what, Lou? I'll say this here. I'm going to make this my game's lock pick.
Okay.
Because I think it is abundantly clear which of the two teams is better in this one. You have the Heisman Trophy winner here. I find it hard to believe that Tulane is gonna upset USC.
If they are, I got the nice beach for a property I'd like to sell you in Alaska.
Do you want me to make that your game lock pick as well?
Sure.
All right, I will lock that in as your game lock pick as well. We have two more bowls left to choose from. First, the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. At Camping World Stadium, we have the LSU Tigers as 10.5-point favorites against the Purdue Boilermakers.
Repeat again, Purdue against what again?
Against LSU, and LSU is 10.5-point favorites.
LSU,
and I agree with you on that one. I am going LSU as well here. It's when you play in the SEC, it's a completely different game compared
Absolutely.
To other compared to other conferences. All right, and finally we have the Rose Bowl. Where we will see the Penn State Nittany Lions as 3-point underdogs to the Utah Utes.
Penn State, no question.
Okay, you will go with Penn State on that. And you know what? I'm going to agree with you. I originally was going to go with Utah, but kind of thinking about it, I kind of see Penn State potentially taking that.
All right.
So, all right. So those are our picks officially, which I will submit to Games Gridiron to put all that stuff in. And Lou, where you are right now in the rankings, let's put it this way. There's a pretty good possibility that you could completely skyrocket up the leaderboard with depending on how good your picks pan out here. So on to our next topic. Let's discuss a little bit of the World Cup because we had let's put it this way, quite the last 2 days here of the World Cup. First off, Croatia beat Brazil in penalty kicks by a score of 4-2 they went into extra time, and Brazil seemingly had taken the lead off of a goal by Neymar. But Brazil made the mistake of basically bringing in reserves, and all of a sudden Croatia capitalized with time close to expiring, and they ended up tying Brazil, which then brought them into penalty kicks. We have brought Diane back into this. She has rejoined the call, so I want to get her thoughts as well on this. So Lou and Diane, I mean, Brazil, one of the first juggernauts to fall in the quarterfinals here of the World Cup. What are your thoughts?
I thought when Neymar hit that goal, it was going to be it because I didn't think that Croatia could come back and do it. And then 5 minutes left in extra time, and just couldn't hold on to it. I was just stunned, completely stunned by it. How do you let that get away?
I know it was pretty weird. It was pretty weird, honestly. It was pretty weird with how the entire game's you know, with how their entire landscape completely changed. Diane, what are your thoughts? Did you get a chance to watch Brazil and Croatia?
When
did
they play?
You didn't get a chance?
Yesterday.
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't watch Brazil and Croatia.
You missed a good game. And for those of you who didn't see it, I'm sorry.
I don't really follow soccer, though. You know that.
True. But this isn't just soccer. This is the World Cup.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. World Cup, regular soccer, I don't really follow it.
Okay.
You know that.
I know.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was weird, Lou, because it was Brazil, it kind of makes you wonder just exactly how big of an impact those two injuries that they got had on the team as a whole.
Injuries
can
play a major factor in.
You know, you kind of wonder if they still had those two guys were available to play, maybe perhaps things would have turned out differently.
I would think they would, yes.
Then we had in the main event of yesterday's two games, Argentina narrowly got by the Netherlands in penalty kicks 4-3 after Argentina gave up a 2-goal lead in regulation time, and they had to go into they ended up having to go into extra time.
That goal, I mean,
and
Brazil, it was only 1 minute left to go in injury time, and the Netherlands just caught by. I was just like, what the hell? I don't believe it. I just simply don't believe it.
Yeah, Wout Weghorst got both goals for the Netherlands during regulation, one at 83 minutes and one at 11 minutes of stoppage time. Argentina got their goals from Nahuel Molina, and Lionel Messi got one on a penalty kick 73 minutes in. And also, I think this may have played a bit of a role when it came to penalty kicks. Denzel Dumfries got removed with a red card.
Good.
So he was unable to play he was unable to kick for the Netherlands. So that may have played a role. But, you know, it was actually a pretty impressive showing, though, for the Netherlands, considering the fact that, you know, usually they're not a team that usually goes as far as they did. But they, you know, they had a pretty impressive showing in this year's World Cup. They took Argentina to the brink, and, you know, really, it's everybody thought that coming into this that Argentina would probably handle the Netherlands with no problem, but Netherlands really put up quite the fight. Now, in today's game, we had first off, Morocco with the ride of a century here for them, becoming,
yeah.
I believe they became the they
first
became
African nation team.
The first African nation team to reach the semifinals of the World Cup. And on a goal by Youssef En-Nesyri, with 42 minutes in, gave Morocco the win, pretty much, over Portugal. Even with a red card by Walid Chedira in stoppage time, and from what it sounds like now Chedira will not be able to play because he got the red card, so he will be ineligible to play
in the
semifinal. But the bigger story here is that Portugal had to play without Cristiano Ronaldo for literally the entire first half because of that benching situation.
Which could have helped if he played the whole game. Maybe it might have made a difference for Ronaldo and them. But, I think with his absence, mostly in the first half, I think it kind of hurt him for Portugal.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask you, Lou. You know, how big of a difference would that have potentially been if he had stayed, started, considering the fact that he almost scored towards the end of the game.
Yeah, but that shot was just a little bit off. I was like, how the hell can you miss that?
I mean, it's actually. Granted, the one game that the first game that he was put on the bench, the guy ended up his replacement ended up scoring a hat trick in that very same game. But still, this guy is one of the best players in the world, even at the age of 38. How the hell are you going to put him on the bench in the quarterfinals?
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, that right there should sum up why Portugal lost to begin with.
Right.
Portugal should have won?
Mm-hmm. They should have died.
Okay.
Yeah, honestly, they should have won. If they had Ronaldo for the entire game, if you're reaching the quarterfinals or semifinals or the finals of the World Cup, you want to make sure all of your best players are in the starting lineup.
Ronaldo is a good player.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Yeah.
And, it's basically malpractice
mm-hmm.
by the coach to leave him out of the starting lineup, all because
mm-hmm.
of a petty little grudge.
Mm-hmm.
So now, because of that, Morocco will advance to the semifinals instead of Portugal, and
mm-hmm.
that is basically the second of our upsets
well,
that have taken place this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in the main event, the so-called main event of today's matchups, England versus France. And France advances to the semifinals with a 2-1 victory over the Brits. Goals from Arlen Tchouaméni and Olivier Giroud gave France the 2-1 victory, with England's lone goal coming from Harry Kane, which was on a penalty kick, his first
yeah.
of two penalty kicks. Which I want to bring this question to you, Lou. Do you believe that Kane should have taken that second kick like he did?
I think he should have, yes.
Honestly, I think it should have been somebody different.
Oh.
Because when you think about it, Kane, when he attempted that second kick, he attempted to go to the exact same spot that he went to the first time.
Right.
Problem is, he kicked it. He had way too much power in that kick, and it ended up sailing over the crossbar for obviously no goal, which ultimately ended up giving France the win. I think if you had chosen a different player to take that kick, maybe it would have been a 2-2 tie, and we could have potentially been heading into extras.
Who do you think should have taken the second kick?
Well, I can't say for sure who should have taken
right.
the second kick, but because when you think about it, when a goalkeeper faces a player for the first time in that game, they see the way that that player is thinking. So obviously they're going to be ready the second time around, assuming that that player is going to go for the exact same spot that he scored the first time,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly yep. what Harry Kane did or Harry Kane attempted.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So honestly, you know, and I spoke with a couple of my friends about this and they said the same thing. England should have gone with somebody else. Even though Harry Kane would have set the new English record that was previously held by, or that's currently held by Wayne Rooney, he would have set the record for the most goals scored during a World Cup for Team England.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, England falls. Now our two semifinal matchups, the first one on Tuesday at 2 p.m., you have Argentina favored to win over Croatia, and that will be on Fox. And for our second matchup, we have France taking on Morocco on Wednesday at 2 p.m. on Fox. Then we have the third place game, which will take place next Saturday on the 17th. Where the two losers of the semifinals will meet up. They will meet up at 10 a.m. on Fox. And next Sunday, we will have the World Cup final at 10 a.m. on Fox to determine who will take home the World Cup.
After the battle of the losers.
You know, honestly, Lou, I said this last week on your show.
Yes, you did.
I said it would be Argentina. I'm kind of thinking it might be France now. With how Mbappe has played, he's the leader for the Golden Boot right now for the World Cup by one goal. With how he's played, I could really see France potentially taking it over Argentina. I think the final will ultimately be Argentina and France. But I think France is going to take it.
I would love to see Messi get that one World Cup.
He's
been eluded from it. It's his time. It's his destiny. He's got to win.
The problem here, though, is I think that France is a little bit more stacked as a team overall, as opposed to Argentina.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it all depends. I mean, if they can somehow limit Mbappe in a potential finals matchup, I could potentially see Argentina taking it, but.
Mm.
I mean, Mbappe, he just commands control of the ball. So,
yes,
it would be hard to imagine, honestly, anybody else taking it. So I think France honestly repeats as a World Cup winner.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But I don't know. You know, hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong about it, and we see Messi finally get his World Cup win.
How could the greatest soccer player in the world not have a World Cup? That's beyond me.
Right. You know, it's hard to even imagine that. We do have some sad news, though, to report from the World Cup.
Yes.
In particular, Grant Wall, an American sports writer, passed away early today at the age of 49 while covering the World Cup. He had randomly collapsed during the quarterfinal match between Argentina and the Netherlands. where he then ended up receiving medical treatment on site before he was transferred to an area hospital by ambulance. And so it's said here that at the beginning of his Football with Grant Wall podcast, on Thursday, which was released, he had said that he had bronchitis and he had been to the medical clinic twice that day, and he ended up canceling everything that he was supposed to do that day in order to take a nap. He said that he had felt better, but not 100%. And basically, he said that his cough that he had gotten sounded like a death rattle sometimes. And from what it sounds like, it sounds like everybody around the World Cup has been coughing like that. And from what it kind of sounds like it's not COVID related, because he said that they're not really seeing COVID cases in the area. We're just seeing a lot of general sickness, coughing, colds, and I can't wait to be on the other side of what I have. He was very ready to attend Friday's game and cover Argentina and Netherlands, where ultimately he ended up collapsing. And nobody anticipated that it would be his last soccer game that he would cover. However, his brother, though, is not convinced and believes that there was foul play involved. And yeah. Alex, you're now on the show. Welcome, Alex.
Hey.
I mean, let's get everybody's thoughts on this. Obviously, Grant Wall is known for not just being a journalist, but also he was known for being detained in Qatar for wearing a LGBTQ plus shirt as a supporter.
Wow. I didn't know about this.
Yep, apparently so.
That's a huge side note here. I didn't know about that. And then he suddenly, God bless him, this tragedy strikes. I didn't know about the shirt controversy. Wow.
Yeah, and anybody that's been following, they know or if you didn't, now you do. About Qatar's stance on LGBTQ, to where they had banned anybody from wearing or bringing in any sort of colorful clothing like that, as well as they banned the sale of alcohol as well. But that's a completely different. A completely different story there, because everybody wants their alcohol.
Yes.
But Grant Wall, you know, he gets detained. Then all of a sudden he randomly falls ill. Now, to be fair, though, he was detained earlier during the World Cup.
Quite a coincidence. Quite a coincidence either way. I mean, that's really shady. I didn't know about that part.
Yeah.
Dave. Very interesting. And they're so strict about it. That would lead me I'll throw in my two cents. That would lead me to think that there's some kind of a foul play behind the scenes. It's almost like the terrible craziness where it's like if you go against Putin, you know, suddenly you fall off a cigarette boat or you fall down the hotel lobby stairs the next week suddenly and there's no witnesses suddenly. And there seems like there's a lot of smoke where there's a fire there with this journalist suddenly dying. That's really I think there's definitely foul play there.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what his brother believes too, is that there's foul play because he's not buying the whole thing that that his brother all of a sudden died of bronchitis.
No.
Right.
Because that's what his brother had in the days leading up to his death. Was bronchitis, and then all of a sudden he passes, you know, he completely falls while he was covering the Argentina quarterfinal yesterday.
Terrible.
Just like that.
You know, Alex, did you get the chance at all to watch any of the games from the last couple of days?
You know, I didn't. Unfortunately, I love Lou's show just as much as yours. I keep having to miss that one because I'm working during the day on Saturdays now. So I didn't see the France England. I know Harry Kane. I really do like soccer, actually, and I was just reading. I got home about an hour ago. I had to do some stuff, and then I wanted to jump on as soon as I could. But yeah, I noticed Harry Kane lost the penalty. He missed his penalty kick, and France emerged victorious. I wasn't able to really see it at all today, unfortunately. Did you guys check it out?
Yeah, that was his second of the day, actually. He had made the first kick, and he went in the second kick. He went to the exact same spot. He aimed at the exact same spot, and then he ended up. The kick ended up sailing wide over the crossbar.
Oh my god!
And you know, it kind of makes you wonder. Do you think England would have been better off going with somebody else taking that second penalty kick? Because
he's a legendary player. Yeah, I mean, he's a legendary player and the country's best goal scorer. It's like your best player missed a couple free throws. You still want him, you know, redemption. Mm-hmm. You still want him to give him another shot down at the end of the fourth quarter. Because think about it, if they brought in someone else and they missed it, this would be under less fire and less criticism than if you went to someone else and they missed it again. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, I'd probably stick with my top striker to take that shot again.
So would I.
I'd stick with Kane. Yeah. Tough, though. Debate.
I mean, here's my problem here is that, you know, when a goalkeeper faces the same guy in multiple times during a game, they, you know, after that first attempt, they now know where they're going to go during that second attempt.
Yeah.
So, you know, wouldn't it be better to go with somebody else so that, you know, you keep the goalkeeper guessing?
Point, and I've never really thought about that. I've never really seen this happen where there was controversy where. So he got two both in the second half, two chances.
Mm-hmm. No,
wow.
he got his first one in the first half and the second one in the second half.
Yeah, and now that I think about it twice, I mean, and England's a very talented nation with soccer. I'm sure they do have a couple guys that are pretty savvy when it comes to penalty kicks. So, yeah, I mean, maybe on second thought, maybe they should have gone to someone else. I know they have Raheem. They have a couple of really, worldwide goal scorers on their team. It's not like USA's roster right now where they have that one guy, Pulisic, is, like, the guy scoring. England does have some different weapons.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's, there's a reason why they were considered to be, you know, one of the favorites. To go all the way this year. And, you know, it's kind of surprising that they ultimately ended up falling. Well, I shouldn't say surprising, but because, I mean, they were facing the defending champions, but, it's just you kind of saw how much better France was compared to England in this World Cup.
Wow.
I'm
in my 40s now. I know growing up, I mean, England was like, you guys probably remember that too. They've always been really powerful. So it's not like there's some random young team just trying to make the mark.
Brazil
England
was
very prestigious.
So was Italy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, England's been down this road before. They've been to this grand stage. They're a very proud soccer nation, for sure. Not their first rodeo.
Yeah, and they would have broken.
Was on their last either.
Harry Kane, if he had gotten that goal, He would have broken Wayne Rooney's record for the most goals scored by a Team England player in a single World Cup.
Yeah.
So
that was their other huge goal scorer coming up. I remember him.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, not to sound weird, but you know, gun to my head, or if I had to bet $100, if I were the coach, I would leave him in for a second. I'd let him do it again. Because I'd have trouble sleeping tonight, and I'd be getting probably fired overnight as the head coach if I went away from him and had someone else kick it. It's just too tough,
right,
bro.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Think
it's like
about
if you not Gretzky, but if you have like the best player on the Nashville Predators or the New Jersey Devils, the best goal scorer, you want taking that one incredibly important moment. You still want to give that guy a second chance. You want to give him a second chance on the biggest stage ever. You know, maybe I'll try this guy. He was good in practice. Maybe I'll try him. Like, it's really hard not to give Harry Kane another chance.
Yeah, when you think about it, though, imagine the kind of response that Harry Kane is now facing from not just fans, but also the English media now, because
of
the fact that he
wait.
Missed that.
It's not even an NBA Finals or a World Series where you have one off season. Now you've got 4 years. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Kane's probably 30 or early 30s. He's not nowadays, 4 year waits. A lot of these cycle through. He might be a substitute, but this might be his last shot to really be the man for England. I don't know how old he is. I got to look it up. He won't be taking him next time. Won't be taking that PK in 4 years if they get back.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. Lou, what would you do, or Steve? I mean, what? I'd let the guy take two. He's my best goal scorer.
I mean,
I don't
know if I would go. I don't know if I would go with it. If I would go with him for a second straight time, because the goalkeeper would know where he's going in that second. In that second attempt, I would want to keep him guessing.
Yeah, that's
so,
a good one.
I mean, that's just me, though. You know, I would probably want to keep him guessing, and in doing so, by the way, his entire Wikipedia page has now been turned to complete French.
Oh my God. Yeah, the English,
ooh, la,
the,
la.
And the soccer fan hooligans were probably having a heck of a long day with libations and drinks. They probably are absolutely terrorizing them on all forms of social media right now in England. They go nuts for their soccer.
They really take it so seriously over there.
They're extreme.
I mean, that's
extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be pretty vicious at times.
That's their one sport. I mean, I would think about it that way. That's their one. That's their NBA, their NHL, their MLB. That's their one sport over there. It's soccer times 100. Every kid, every grandfather, every grandmother, every girlfriend, everyone's watching all those games growing up.
Yeah,
that's their league. That's their everything. So everything is so amplified. Every bad play is so magnified. It's just a whole different level of passion and kind of insanity. When it goes wrong, they just lose their shit, their minds.
Yeah. Speaking of the NFL, I don't know if you heard about this, Alex. Have you heard about the recent Washington Commanders stuff?
It's been about 24 hours since I was working today. So what did I miss with the Daniel Snyder drama?
So,
what did I miss now?
Yeah, there's more Daniel Snyder drama. In particular, and this has received national coverage. We're not talking just on sports. We're talking CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. So the House Oversight Committee did an investigation into the Washington Commanders following the report that came out by the NFL, where the NFL only fined them $10 million, and they had claimed that Dan Snyder had, quote-unquote, learned his lesson. The government was not enthused by that, so they did an investigation of their own. And
oh, wow.
Apparently, their investigation revealed that dozens of employees of the Washington Commanders were harmed for more than two decades because of a toxic work culture. And they also found, this same report also found that team owner Daniel Snyder intimidated cooperative witnesses, witnesses that cooperated with that report.
Wow.
The title of the report is, the title of the report is Conduct Detrimental, How the NFL and the Washington Commanders Covered Up Decades of Sexual Misconduct. So basically, that they said that the results of the committee's investigation are clear. Sexual harassment, bullying, and other toxic conduct pervaded the workplace at the Washington Commanders and were perpetrated by a culture of fear instilled by the team's owner. And the NFL, through the investigation conducted by Ms. Wilkinson, was aware that Mr. Snyder and other team executives not only failed to stop this misconduct, but also engaged in it themselves. The league also knew that Snyder and the Commanders organization used a variety of tactics to intimidate, surveil, and pay off whistleblowers and to influence and obstruct Ms. Wilkinson's work. Rather than seek real accountability, the NFL aligned its legal interests with Mr. Snyder's, failed to curtail his abusive tactics, and buried the investigation's findings. The committee's investigation demonstrates the urgent need for workplace reform. Let's see. One of the things in particular that they had found was the fact that a lot of it had to do with the cheerleaders in particular.
Oh yeah.
Let me see.
I heard about him basically having like auditions where they'd have like photos and like, hey, look at this girl trying out. Like he'd like share photos in the office. Just awful.
Yeah. And that, you know, there were rumors apparently that, they had certain girls strip, supposedly.
I mean, that's just even worse. It's, you know, it's the same road. It's just even worse. Same idea. You can't do any of that stuff.
And
he's a real piece of, you know, he's a real work. He's a real piece of work. All this stuff.
Basically,
he's been going on for years. The fans hate him. And you know what? It's interesting. One of my buddies from work is a big Washington fan. They're actually very, very legit now, the team. They cannot wait for them to finally sell it.
Yeah.
And they have a pretty darn good team. They have a good team now. I like Heineke. But, I mean, either way, there's just a dark cloud with this guy owning the team.
Yeah. I mean, it also says here that Mr. Snyder publicly assailed witnesses, refused to release former employees from their confidentiality obligations, and blocked the committee's access to tens of thousands of documents collected during the Wilkinson investigation. Despite Mr. Snyder's public pledge to cooperate with the committee's investigation, he refused to testify at a public hearing, dodged a duly issued congressional subpoena, and failed to testify fully and completely in a committee deposition. Snyder also leaked derogatory documents about witnesses as quote-unquote retaliation for their cooperation with the committee. It says here that he released internal documents from the email accounts of former employees who cooperated with the investigation.
Yeah, it's just terrible. So he's witness intimidation, like the mafia.
So one such instance here, and actually, you know, I talked about this earlier, but I just found a link here that goes further in depth in this. It said one such instance involved former Commanders president Bruce Allen. Snyder's lawyers had sent an email to the committee's staff on the eve of Allen's deposition. The email included a set of documents from Allen's tenure with the team that Snyder's lawyers deemed relevant to his deposition. The email suggested the documents be shared with Allen so he would have an opportunity to review them prior to his deposition. The documents included emails with embarrassing language and inappropriate content, according to the report. These emails, which were apparently collected from Mr. Allen's commander's account, included those that had been leaked to the Wall Street Journal and New York Times back in October of 2021. When asked why he believed Mr. Snyder would provide the tranche of documents the night before his deposition, Mr. Allen explained that Mr. Snyder was trying to send a message to him to, quote-unquote, be careful. According to Mr. Allen, Mr. Snyder's actions signaled that, and I quote, he owns me with these emails, which affect my coworkers, the alumni, my family, and friends.
Yeah, so basically, breeding an environment of fear and intimidation so no one can speak out against him.
And also, there are some of the workplace misconduct stuff. There's some that are further in depth here. It says here that Snyder sexually harassed female subordinates for years and even had secret soft porn videos made of cheerleaders, former employees, according to former employees that had told a congressional committee back in February. Six former employees made the allegations. Those allegations were made by six former employees. One of the former employees, named Tiffany Johnston, made new allegations against Snyder on Thursday, saying that he placed his hand on her thigh without her consent at a team dinner, and that he pushed her towards his limousine with his hand on her lower back. Basically saying he left his hand on the middle of my thigh until I physically removed it. So describing the incident outside his limousine, she said the only reason Dan Snyder removed his hand from my back and stopped pushing me towards his limo was because his attorney intervened and said, Dan, this is a bad idea.
Yes.
And then she learned that she should remove himself or herself from Dan's grip while his attorney was distracting him. One of their former marketing directors, Melanie Coburn, and one-time video production manager Brad Baker both repeated the allegation that Snyder had secret videos made for him called, and I quote, the good bits from video that was recorded at cheerleader shoots, saying that we trusted the production team to capture footage and keep it safe. Little did we know they were zooming in on private parts and keeping cameras rolling during costume changes, according to Coburn. And representatives of the team have – representatives for the team have denied the allegations from the hearing.
Yeah, I mean, the guy should be out of a job. They should pull the Donald Sterling and just remove him as an owner.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, that right there, honestly, he has more skeletons in his closet, honestly, than what they revealed about Donald Sterling. I mean, Donald Sterling, Sterling was a racist, but that's really all that, you know, he was really removed
this is
from
10
the NBA for. You know, I mean, this is basically we can't really compare racism to, you know, sexual misconduct and stuff like that. But,
no.
I mean, there's that, which is one incident one batch of things. And then there's multiple things here with the Commanders.
And you could kind of argue, too, that this bit of information from the Commanders may have been why John Gruden got fired. Because that
because
one of his emails was part of the stuff that was leaked out from the Commanders' investigation, which then led to his firing from the Raiders. So if I'm John Gruden, I'm licking my chops right now.
Gruden's wasn't nearly as bad, let's be totally honest. Was it good? No. But it didn't approach this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously what Gruden did was wrong, but at the same time, you know, this kind of proves that he was basically a victim of Dan Snyder.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
But anyway, enough about that topic. How about going to the NFL, and in particular, the playoff situation that's currently going on in the NFL? In particular, we'll go to one of the playoff teams in the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers, who will be without Jimmy Garoppolo with a broken foot. However, from what it sounds like, he may be eligible to return for the playoffs. But Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant from this past NFL draft, he came in relief, threw for 210 yards and 2 touchdowns, but he also did throw a pick as well in relief of Garoppolo. And now, from what it sounds like he will start the rest of the season for the 49ers. Here's a question, though. Could we potentially – I mean, granted, let's face it, Purdy is nowhere near the quarterback that Brady is or was.
He is not.
But could we have potentially another situation here where if Purdy performs well enough that we may see another Brady Bledsoe situation?
I don't know if we'll go that far. I mean, Purdy is no Brady. For sure.
I think the question is, if he's good, will he start the rest of the season? Will he start next season if you have Garoppolo?
Yeah, like, would you stick with Purdy in the playoffs, even if Garoppolo returns, or would you go back to Garoppolo as soon as Garoppolo returns?
Tough decision, to be honest.
If Purdy performs well, like say the 49ers win out the rest of the season here and they make the playoffs and Purdy performed pretty good during the last couple of games, do you stick with Purdy? Or do you go back to Garoppolo?
I think maybe if Purdy does one of them, I think you stick with him.
Yeah, if he does well enough, you'll stick with him.
If he does that well. It's not been decided yet. And I don't know if Garoppolo will be ready, you know, being out with the kind of injury and whatnot. I don't think he'll be up to it. I don't think he'll be up to par.
Yeah, that's another factor to think of as well. And actually, it's funny I mentioned the comparison to Tom Brady, or not comparing him to Tom Brady, because he is facing Tom Brady this week with the Niners hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, when's this happening?
It is the 4:25 game on Fox tomorrow. I don't know if it'll be broadcast in the Northeast or not, or if we may get.
It might.
Or I don't even know who has the doubleheader tomorrow. If it's CBS or if it's Fox.
Right.
Because CBS has the Chiefs and Broncos. But let me see.
Yeah,
I can actually. Yeah, but I can actually take a look real quick here. So the 1 o'clock game in my area, at least, is the Eagles and Giants on Fox. And then, oh yeah, okay. So Tampa Bay and San Francisco is the 4:25 game. So
okay.
Fox does have the doubleheader. That's actually a pretty good. That's actually a pretty good lineup for tomorrow.
Giants Eagles is always a good one. That should be a fun one.
You know,
according to weather conditions, though.
Yeah.
What are the conditions?
Yeah, that's right.
No.
No.
Wow.
Well, rain, but it's going to be ugly.
Well, for my
yeah, area, rain will affect the football game, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be it's going to be, you know, that's a pretty big game in particular for the Giants too. So for
yes.
the Giants and the Eagles. But I will say, though, I will congratulate the Eagles on officially winning the division, because that Giants and Commanders tie pretty much ensured, I think, that the Eagles will win that division. I mean, yeah,
uh-huh.
the Eagles still have the Cowboys. They still have the Cowboys to contend with, but... You know, it sounds like the Eagles could potentially run it the rest of the way.
Yes, they probably could.
Dallas is getting that confidence back. We'll see. So, yeah, tomorrow, Eagles should be one step closer. I mean, I think they'll win a sloppy game by, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 points.
It'll be sloppy
spread,
for sure.
Spread 7.5. I'm not touching that.
Yeah, no, hell no. I wouldn't touch it if I were you.
That's the fourth quarter, you know what I mean? Four-pointer, field goal game, fourth quarter.
Considering how unpredictable the Giants have been, in particular, when it comes to the spread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, who knew that all it took was a competent offensive line and competent receivers for Baker Mayfield to show that he's good again.
Yeah. I mean, the Panthers dumped him after having a sucky season. He goes to the Rams and pulls off their version of the miracle of the Meadowlands.
Yeah, that was absurd. I may or may not have put a few tokens on the Raiders. I was a little bit shocked. Baker Montana. He's like playing like Joe Montana. He's been there for less than 2 days. And I mean, there's not a worse way to lose a bet than that.
Yeah, you know, if there's one thing I've learned, you never bet on a Josh McDaniels led team. You're almost guaranteed that he's going to blow it somehow.
Yeah, I should have not done that.
They were leading 13-3 at the half,
yeah.
Vegas was. They were leading 13-3. Actually, they were leading 16-3, and then L.A. came back with two straight touchdowns to win it. And that's the
yeah,
second
playing,
or no, that's the
like
fourth
playing.
Game.
Jesus. Yeah, and I saw
that's
the
a,
end. I didn't see some of it, but I saw the end. They were playing like prevent, and then the Raiders got like maybe two first downs in the second half. I mean, just like begging for them to come back and beat them. That's awful. And that was do or die. The Rams are pretty much eliminated. The Raiders had everything to play for, and they couldn't even hold on against Baker Mayfield, who's
been there for 2 days. And now they're essentially eliminated too.
I mean, as a pro quarterback, you guys know, I mean, 2 days, he probably didn't even know the playbook. He's just, like, making up plays, and they score two drives in a row in the fourth quarter. I've never – tough to stomach.
I mean, it's just Honestly, it's kind of embarrassing now when you lose to a when you're Josh McDaniels, and you know, everybody was saying, oh, McDaniels was responsible for the New England offenses of the past decade. Yeah, that's true, but at the same time, his record as head coach, you know, he's clearly not a head coach. He's clearly not head coaching material, basically.
No. Yeah. Baker's,
you know,
it starts the coach. Hey, he's got to go. I mean, they've been a massive disappointment.
Well, the Raiders are stuck with him for at least one more year because the Raiders can't afford. They don't have the money to fire him and then bring in a new coach.
Hmm.
So they are stuck with him for at least one more year.
Wow, that's nuts.
And, I mean, they're 5-8 right now. Now they're 5-8 because of the loss to the Rams. And, man, I mean, the best that they can finish, they can hope to win out and, you know, maybe finish one game over 500. But as far as their playoff chances go, I mean, they're at number 12 right now, and seven teams make the playoffs. So it's not looking good for the Raiders right now. You could kind of say, I mean, you have the Browns and the Steelers who are ahead of them right now in the playoff race.
Maybe.
So. And the Steelers, I mean, just imagine the Steelers with how bad that they have played, with how bad they've looked this year.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the Raiders have probably been the biggest disappointment in the league.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just embarrassing the way that with how many games that they've led by double digits this year. Four or five games that they've led with double digits, and they've blown it each time in the fourth quarter. It's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing by the Raiders at this point. But as it stands right now, there are the current playoff spots for the AFC. You have the Bills on top of the AFC at 9-3. The Chiefs are in second. You have the Ravens in third at 8-4. You have the Titans at 7-5 in fourth. In fifth, you have the Cincinnati Bengals at 8-4. That's mainly because obviously the first four teams in each playoff picture are of course the divisional leaders. Then at number five, Bengals are at number five. Let's see. Number six, you have the Dolphins at 8-4, and you have the Jets just barely hanging in there at 7-5, with the Patriots on the bubble at 6-6, as well as the Chargers on the bubble at 6-6. So, and I mean, I guess to an extent you could say the Browns and Steelers are maybe still in it, depending on what happens this week.
But it's hanging on by a thread.
Yeah. And as far as the NFC goes, you have the Eagles on top in the NFC with an 11-1 record. You have the Minnesota Vikings at number two at 10-2. The San Francisco 49ers at 8-4. They are in the third spot. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in the fourth spot at 6-6. Very surprising when you think about it. You have the Cowboys at 9-3, but yet they're in the fifth spot. The Giants are in the sixth spot at 7-4-1. And the Geno Smith-led Seattle Seahawks are 7-5 in the seventh spot. Geno Smith. Oh, hang on. We have breaking news. The New York Mets have signed Kodai Senga, starting pitcher from Japan.
Okay, nice. Another Japan pitcher.
And once again, Chaim Bloom loses out on yet another player he was going after.
Guy's really good. We'll see. Well, there's always the chance of the Arabu. But apparently this guy is legit.
You know, I did a whole entire rant on Red Sox management earlier. Supposedly the Red Sox were negotiating with Kodai Senga on a 7-year deal. And by the way, I've seen this guy's stuff. He has nasty stuff. So the Mets, they got themselves a good one here if he translates well over to the majors.
Yeah, I mean, he sounds legit, Steve. We'll see. You know, we've all been on this road before. We'll see it when we see it. But he's got really good stuff, apparently.
Yeah. And not just that, but let's see. Is there any – let me see if it'll – does not say what the deal is right now. But it was reported by Andy Martino at SNY. Oh, here we go. 5 years, $75 million.
Wow, that's a good deal, man.
Yeah.
Seems like it. I was waiting. When you said 5 years, I was waiting for like $100 million plus. Who knows, though? I mean, he could totally flame out. He could totally bust. So, but I think that's a good contract. It's not absolutely crazy.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a pretty good deal. Especially for Japanese pitchers, most Japanese pitchers translate well over to the majors.
Yes.
Reading about him, he's 6'2". He throws 96. He can top 100.
Oh, yes.
How old is he?
He is 29, I think.
That's a pretty damn – that's a darn good deal, I think.
I might be wrong.
I'm a little biased, but sounds like a good deal.
No, I actually agree with you. That's actually a pretty good deal when you consider the other Japanese player that signed, in particular with the Boston Red Sox, when the Red Sox signed Masataka Yoshida to a 5-year, $90 million deal for an unproven player. I mean, granted, Kodai Senga is the same, but a lot of people have considered the Yoshida contract an overpay, as Yoshida is now holds the new record for any Japanese position player making the jump over from Nippon Professional Baseball to the majors, as the record was just set last spring by Seiya Suzuki, who signed with the Cubs on a 5-year, $85 million deal.
Oh, wow.
However, though, Yoshida, the last 7 years he's played in the NPB, the Nippon Professional Baseball League, he has a career .327 batting average. And he was also hitting in a pitcher-friendly park. And despite being listed at just 5'8", he's topped 21 home runs in 4 of the last 5 years in a pitcher-friendly ballpark. So that kind of makes you wonder, what is he going to do in a hitter-friendly ballpark like Boston?
Yeah.
Now, what position is he?
Outfield.
Okay.
And from what it sounds like, it sounds like he'll play left field.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
In particular.
I don't know. You know more than me about them. I mean, you're more disgruntled. I mean, how do you let Bogarts go? And then, like, I don't know what they're doing in Boston.
Oh, boy. You know, with Bogarts.
So disheartening. Deflating.
Here's the thing with that contract. And, you know, I said it earlier tonight, and I said it on Lou's show as well. That contract, I can understand why Boston didn't go 11 years. He's going to be 41 at the end of that deal. I guarantee you the last 3 or 4 years of that deal are probably going to be horrific especially at the average annual value that they have it at, which I think is like $27-28 million per year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I'm not really that. I mean, yeah, of course I'm upset at Red Sox management for not doing more, for not trying to re-sign Bogarts. But, you know, if they had given him what they last offered him, which was 6 years at 160 mil, I guarantee you he probably would have taken that in spring training instead of the 4 years, 90 million that they offered. But, I mean, Bogarts, to his credit, he did go back to them and say, look, San Diego gave me a hell of an offer. You know, are you guys willing to come close? And the Red Sox weren't. So, you know, this isn't anything new, honestly, to Boston fans, because they've done this to homegrown stars multiple times. They did it to John Lester. That's why Lester jumped from Boston to Chicago. They did it to Mookie Betts. And Mookie, of course, ended up leaving and in one of the worst trades possible. And now they've done it to Bogarts, and they're probably going to do it to Devers, too.
But, yeah, you're right. The end of that deal is pretty absurd. The end of that deal, Padres are just throwing bank truckloads of money everywhere.
And
very
now,
long-term deal.
Now, I guess, apparently the plan is they're going to try and go after Correa or Swanson, and chances are they're not going to sign either one. So instead, they'll probably have Trevor Story with his weakened arm go over to shortstop.
Wow.
And they're going to have Christian Arroyo become the everyday second baseman, which I can tell you right now is a massive fucking downgrade. Massive downgrade.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
What is he, just a deplorable fielder? Because I know his stats are solid. His offensive stats are okay. Arroyo.
Let's put it this way. Bogarts with 15 homers. Bogarts with 15 homers had bigger stats than Arroyo.
Yeah.
You know, it really tests my patience as a fan. Because now I'm looking at this season like there's no fucking way they're going to contend. You know, the management, All management cares about now is making money. I mean, hell, John Henry is even raising ticket prices for a fifth-place team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just awful. That's not cool at all.
Stupid's a better word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, management doesn't give a fuck, so why should I?
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. Why invest
all
your
they
time
care
and your
about,
heart and your energy?
All they care about is raising. Yeah, that's they're raising ticket prices, and Henry claims it's because of the rising inflation. Bull fucking shit.
Exactly.
If you're gonna raise ticket prices, at least try and please your fans like the Yankees do.
Yeah,
the Yankees may rise ticket prices.
Field.
Yeah, the Yankees may rise ticket prices, but at least they put a product out on the field.
I mean, this is a slap in the face to Red Sox fans. It's hard to find a more passionate, you know, they know their baseball. They don't deserve this. They're not small markets. They're not half-assed fans. This isn't then you have the Padres, half the crowd is surfing. They probably don't even sell the stadium half as much as Boston. And they get spoiled with all these massive superstars. And then Boston, old school, extremely traditional, proud franchise, and they're screwing over their fans.
Yeah. It's almost like John Henry is like, hey, I gave you guys four World Series titles while you guys hadn't won one in 86 years. So
now
what the fuck's the problem?
Trying to get money back out. Yeah. Awful.
Hell, he cares more about potentially acquiring the Washington Commanders and getting an NBA expansion franchise.
Yep, seems like it. Terrible.
And you know what? Immediately, as soon as the Bogarts news broke out, who was the first person to get thrown under the bus by John Henry's Boston Globe? It wasn't John Henry. It was Chaim Bloom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Chaim Bloom was the first one to get thrown under the bus immediately. Almost as if they had the article already typed up and ready to be published.
Wow.
Yeah.
So John Henry, and I've said this multiple times on Twitter, John Henry, fuck you.
fuck you.
For giving up on this team, a team that has gotten you your wealth over the past two decades. Fuck you.
Yeah.
And I hope you fucking sell the team. I hope you fucking sell the team to somebody who actually gives a fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just insulting at this point.
It is.
I mean, hell, you take a look at all the
French. Yeah, go for it.
You take a look at all the Boston teams in major sports leagues. The Bruins. They barely have any cap space. Why?
Yeah.
Because they spend. The Celtics, they barely have any cap space. Why? Because they spend. The Patriots, they're in the middle of the pack, but still, they spend on players. The Red Sox, the only reason why their number was so fucking high this year was because of Chris Sale's albatross of a contract. They had a shit ton of money coming off of the books this year. And what do they have to show for it? They have Kenley Jansen, who, by the way, I actually like that move. But still, it's a two-year deal, and he's an aging closer. They have Chris Martin, once again, a deal that I liked. But still, he's not a young player. He's in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have bring in Yoshida. God knows if he's going to translate over to the majors or not.
Well,
I mean, it's just embarrassing at this point. It's embarrassing by Red Sox management. You signed those three guys, but yet you let a fan favorite and the heart and soul of this team in Xander Bogaerts go. I mean, what the fuck is going to happen to Devers now? If you're not going to sign Bogaerts, how are we supposed to believe you're going to sign Devers?
Yeah, now Devers is, and his camp, his agent, they're already looking for the door.
I mean, I can tell you right now, with the deal that Aaron Judge got this offseason, you can kind of expect the same deal that for Devers.
Five young bat in the world. What's Devers, 25 years old?
I think so, yes. He'll be a free agent this upcoming off season, or so next off season he'll be a free agent. Oh, and not to mention, Red Sox management lied to Kike Hernandez to get him to sign his extension by claiming that the Red Sox would be way better in 2023. Mm. When in reality, they look worse right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
They still have yet to replace Nate Eovaldi, who is still on the free agent market. And who knows, you know, maybe they're going to bring him back. But they need starting pitching. There's still holes that this team needs to fill. And maybe perhaps that's why they didn't re-sign Bogaerts. But it's like you fill certain holes, but then you dig an even fucking deeper one by releasing by letting Bogaerts leave.
Yeah, I'm sorry. From an outside perspective, they cannot be a better team right now without Bogaerts.
I mean, it's a major free fall to go from Bogaerts to having Story as your shortstop, and then putting Christian Arroyo in. Like, let me bring up Arroyo's stats. Now, keep in mind, Bogaerts batted like close to 300 this year, or somewhere around there. Arroyo batted 286 with six homers. Oh my God, why is this screwing up? With six homers and 36 RBIs and 87 games played, that's gonna be your second baseman to start off this year, barring any other moves being made.
I mean, Story Arroyo, come on, that's just not a good middle infield.
No,
especially for a big market team in an incredibly hard division, it's not gonna cut it.
And I'll tell you right now, Red Sox Twitter is fucking blowing up right now. They're pissed. They're pissed at the fact that, reports.
So it's irate right now. Yeah, totally.
There were reports that were out that claimed that the Red Sox were in heavy negotiations with Kodai Senga. And I mean, some were saying that they were negotiating on a 7-year deal with Senga, and now he only signs for 5 years with the Mets. And by the way, there is an opt out. There is a no trade clause as part of this deal for Senga with the Mets. And there's also an opt-out after year 3 of the 5-year deal as part of Senga's contract. So
the Mets, not to sidetrack, but Mets-wise, it's a great deal. I mean, now 29-year-olds, the top of their rotation is pretty much two 40-year-olds. So they needed – I mean, 29 seems pretty darn young compared to what else they got cooking.
Right.
I mean, that pretty much saved it after the DeGrom debacle. I mean, I love Verlander, but he's 40. So they saved some face there with Senga.
I just can't look forward to having Trevor Story at shortstop, considering he doesn't have the arm to be a shortstop anymore. And he specifically said that he would sign to only be a second baseman. But I guarantee
you. Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know he said that. That's like, the opposite of confidence.
So I guarantee, that they're going to have him. They're going to have him switch back to shortstop. I guarantee it.
Yeah, you better earn that money, and not for nothing. I mean, everyone. There was a sense that when you leave Colorado, you know what happens to those stats. So I wasn't exactly clapping. I didn't think it was an incredible signing when they first got Story, and then he's. I don't know. He hasn't been a good signing so far. I don't know if he's going to suddenly recapture his form
right. When
he was hit mile high where, you know, a pop-up is a home run. It's not quite translating to Fenway.
And, you know, they promised that there were going to be trades made, too. Where are the fucking trades?
Right.
It's just more bullshit. It's more lip service. They're obviously just lying all the way around, which is really terrible.
I gotta give credit to the Yankees organization. At least Cashman and Steinbrenner give a fuck about their team.
Yeah.
As much as it pains me to say that as a Red Sox fan. At least they give a fuck about their team.
As you should.
John Henry's doing like the worst of any GM, I think, in sports right now. Just it's disgrace. With all their money, they're just trying to save money and cut corners. It's not fair to the fan base at all.
The Boston Rays. That's what they are right now. The Boston Rays.
The Boston Rays.
And you said it like a month ago on the show, Steve, very astutely, very, very wisely. You said when Bloom came in, lo and behold, that's what they're planning to become, the Rays of the East Coast. I mean, they're just cutting money left and right since that guy came to Boston. They're hitting the dollar store and ponds everywhere they can go.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a fucking disgrace at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, Haim, I wonder if he even realizes that he's just Henry's fall guy.
And then yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
So, anyways, you know, I'm going to cut it a little bit short for tonight. We do have only a couple minutes left anyways. But I do want to thank everybody for calling in tonight and for anybody who listened live but just didn't join in. Thank you to Lou. Thank you to Diane. Thank you to Alex for joining me tonight. A reminder, the Survivor 43 finale recap show will be this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE. Like I said before, if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to the Missy AE podcast by doing so at blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or by going to iTunes, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and I'm sure there's probably something else I forgot to mention too, but you can find us pretty much on any of the major
streaming apps. But anyways, we will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Everybody have a great rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.